Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of February 19th, 2019, and this is officially episode number 385, and this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, and we normally are live here on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com, but after the live show on February 19th, we had some technology issues, and the original recording was lost. So I did put together this recording of the show, which might be a little shorter than the live show. And this isn't the original at all, obviously. But I did want to get this news out to the listeners. And since I did record this live, I didn't want to try and fool anyone with another recording that was not the original. But I have all the show notes here, so I'm going to bring you the news as it was back on February 19th. And this week's news includes... Was a man attacked by a black panther in South Carolina? And are there tigers living in Houston, Texas? We'll also talk about, is the Loch Ness Monster in peril? And UFO sighting in Australia concerns the local police department. And we'll cover the MUFON sighting statistics for January of 2019. And strange things still afoot in British Columbia. This is an ongoing story that I've talked about for years here on the Paranormal News Insider. We'll also talk about some a little baseball here with Jose Canseco as he swings and hits a soft liner to left field. Yeah, that's an interesting story. And if you listen to the live show, I appreciate it. And some people don't really like it too much when I talk about all the paranormal conferences, conventions, but to me, it's something near and dear to me because I do go and I speak at these events and I put them on before. So I've done my own conferences, conventions, and I know how much work it is. So I do like to give back to the paranormal community at large that likes to put on these things and wants people to get the word out. So I do that through the website at paranewsinsider.com. And you can contact me if you have any information about any paranormal conference convention. Just make sure that you check the site first. It's pretty thorough. I do the best I can, but I know I don't have them all. So if you know of any conference convention that's not on that list, feel free to let me know at insider@paranewsinsider.com or go to the website. And there's a contact form there that you can use to email me and let me know. I'm also available via social media, Facebook.com/ParanewsInsider. Also on Twitter, @ParanewsInsider. So, yeah, let me know if you have an event. And there's a number of them that I'll be attending this year. Not too many in the beginning of the year. I've got a lot of stuff going on. But a few in May coming up that I'm really, really excited for, especially the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. You can find more information about that at pabigfootcampingadventure.com. 12 and a half speakers, a lot of other people showing up for a lot of other things. Celebrities will be on hand. There's going to be some workshops going on. We're going to have day and night hikes into the woods. Not all those out in hard to find, hard to track areas, but some in the campground to lead the kids around. I think it's fun. I like to educate kids on different things and let them know what we're looking for and how to look for track and sign. So I'll be doing that as well during that weekend. But great event. Again, check it out, pabigfootcampingadventure.com. Tickets are going fast, and there's big-time people going to be there. Bill Brock, Ken Gerhardt, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, Cliff Berrickman of Finding Bigfoot will also be on hand, Stacy Brown Jr., and it's all being put together by Eric Altman of Pennsylvania. So check that out. But we're going to jump into cryptid news right now and talk about some of these wild and crazy zany stories that have been filling up the paranormal here in the beginning of the year. That this year kind of got off to a slow start, and we're not really getting the traditional paranormal stories, but there's a lot of weird stuff going on out there. And so the show has kind of shifted almost away from paranormal into weird stuff. And I've already been putting together next week's show because obviously recording this a little late. And there's a lot of conspiracy theory stuff that I'm going to talk about, which is something I avoided for a number of years on this show, other than to kind of highlight some of the crazy, zany things that go on behind the curtain of the traditional paranormal. But this week, in Cryptid News, we're going to talk Black Panthers. And tales of Black Panthers are everywhere in the South. Yes, I said tales. And I don't mean like physical tales. Well, maybe physical tales. But I mean stories. And you don't have to look too hard to find signs of Black Panther lore. The Charlotte, North Carolina's National Football League's Carolina Panthers, well, they have their main logo is a Black Panther. Dozens of schools in the East and South sport a Black Panther for a school or sports team. There's lots of stories going back hundreds of years and even current ones talking about sightings of Black Panthers. And one of the many books that I'm currently reading, I've got a probably five or six that I'm reading at any given point in time. One of them is Shadow Cats, The Black Panthers of North America. It's a book written by Michael Mays, which is about Black Panther sightings in Texas. And that's a really big hotspot for Black Panther sightings currently. Now, the big problem is that these sightings are nothing more than stories. And a lot of times they're fabricated and hoaxed photographs. There's really never been anything physical. Now, we do see some photographs, but a lot of these are not where they were actually taken, and it's misrepresenting of the truth behind them. Well, this has all changed. It's completely gone here. Late Monday night on February 11th, history's changed. We actually have proof now. Somebody has proof. A Hemingway, South Carolina man contacted the Georgetown County Sheriff's Office that he not only saw a Black Panther, but was also attacked by one. 33-year-old Ricky Wesley Lynch described his encounter as walking along Moore Drive in Hemingway when he saw a cub cross the road. Then he suddenly felt something grab a hold of his pant leg and bring him to the ground. The animal then ripped his sleeve from his shirt before walking away and giving off what he described as a crying noise. He described the cat as being black-colored and waist-high with a tail that dragged the ground. Lynch was able to get away from the scene to call 911 and went to the hospital for treatment. He suffered two scratch marks on his right leg and one on his right arm. The Department of Natural Resources was brought in to investigate the scene. Deputies from the Georgetown County Sheriff's Office spent hours patrolling the area and warning residents. But ultimately, they did not find evidence of a cat. When Lynch was later interviewed on Tuesday, well, his story began to unravel, and it was just a matter of time until the cat was out of the bag. Okay, well, I didn't come up with that one. That was actually just part of the headline of a couple of stories that talked about these events. So don't blame me. I know my humor is dry, but I didn't come up with that one. Lynch admitted to deputies that he had made up the story of being attacked and admitted that he cut his own clothing. And this was all according to his arrest warrant. He was charged with breach of peace, non-aggravated in nature, and filing a false police report of a felony violation. He was released, a week ago Thursday, shortly after 8 p.m., on a $5,257 bond, according to online records from the Georgetown County Detention Center. So far, we have no idea what led Lynch to tell his tale and make up being attacked by a Black Panther of all things, but his claim did create a little bit of local concern and did tie up officers as well as other resources. And honestly, I'm actually happy to see that this claim led to his arrest. I know that sounds mean, but if you're going to lie about stuff, you should be held accountable, I think. I just think it's fair. You know, you can't walk into a movie theater and scream fire for no reason. You can be arrested for that. And I think the same should be held true if you make a claim that we're under attack by aliens or Bigfoot is in the woods and is going to hurt somebody or that you were attacked by a Black Panther. I think it's all fair game at this point. Another story here. We're going to go to Houston, Texas, from South Carolina. Why not? We're already down south. So when I do presentations on cryptozoology, I use the example of a tiger in Central Park as an example of an out-of-place animal, one of the designations I talk about of cryptozoology. But a lot of cryptozoologists, they don't like using the out-of-place example as a true cryptid, since these animals made their way to that area due to people, usually. We put them there more often than not. But this next story is a sad story dealing with this issue. Hopefully this is a good outcome, though, but it's still kind of a sad story. So an adult male tiger weighing 350 pounds was discovered in a cage in an abandoned home in Houston, Texas. A concerned citizen called authorities, but also admitted to having been, well, smoking pot. So it took a little convincing for authorities to visit the location, but when they did, they discovered, yes, there was a full-grown tiger locked in a cage. The tiger was taken to a 5-acre facility that emulates the tiger's natural habitat until a permanent solution can be found. The tiger was placed in quarantine for a couple of weeks, and those who saw the tiger, which is now named Tyson, I guess for Mike Tyson, and when they watched him first walk on grass, they realized that this was the first time that it had encountered actual grass. So it's a good ending to a potentially sad story, and there's no word yet on if authorities have tracked down the former owner and are going to press any charges in the case. Sad story. Houston is a huge city. If you've ever been to Houston, for me, it's like it goes on forever. You're just driving through Houston forever. It seems like hours to me, but very nice city. I've had a lot of great experiences there, but I've never seen a tiger there. I can't imagine a tiger living in that environment. Pretty hot, pretty humid, pretty scary for anybody that would have seen that. And imagine if that would have gotten out somehow, some way. Not good. All right, so we're going to go from the south. We're going to go all the way to, well, Scotland. Yep, Scotland, home of the Loch Ness Monster. Back in 2013, Gary Campbell, who is the official record keeper of the Loch Ness Monster Sightings Register, well, he was nervous, and he felt that it was possible that Nessie was gone. Maybe she died. She moved away. She packed her bags and left Loch Ness for good. And this was based on the fact that there were no recorded sightings of the creature in Loch Ness at all that year. However, if you've listened to the show, you know that 2018, well, it was a record year of sightings, and it's business as usual in that part of Scotland. I still did sound effects on the show. I would do the cash register thing because, yeah, it brings a lot of money to that region. Energy company Intelligent Land Investments. It doesn't pay to multitask, but you're trying to record a show here. So, energy company Intelligent Land Investments has submitted a planning application to build a new water-powered electric plant along Loch Ness. Well, the plant is expected to produce 300 jobs and will power approximately 400,000 homes. After completion, following 6 years worth of work. But the downsides are plentiful. In order for the plant to work, it will have to create a dam along Loch Ness and allow water to flow over 300 feet underground. So this has led to a bit of fear, as the possibility of water breaching the dam could actually cause major damage to property, could endanger the public. There's also fears concerning potential earthquakes, as there is a fault that runs near the area. And there's also the concern that the 300 workers tearing up the area for 6 years, well, could put a big dent in the tourism industry in the area. Beyond that, there are fears that this could become a target for terrorists or could harm local wildlife. And, well, I've kind of gone downhill there with fears, but if that wasn't concerning enough, there many are worried that the dam could ultimately kill the Loch Ness Monster. Not the tourism piece, but the actual flesh and blood creature. They think that there's a risk that this Loch Ness Monster could be pulled in and killed by the turbines of the dam. Yikes. Well, I don't know about that. But, I think the other concerns are good enough to fight this plan. I mean, it is a danger, and the wording is kind of scary when you read it about the potential loss of life due to water breaching the dam. It's pretty scary. And I don't think that in this day and age that we should be putting people in that kind of position. Is that risk worth the reward of water-powered electricity? Maybe there's other alternatives they can explore, but we'll see as the council will decide on this matter by the end of the year. So I'm sure we'll hear about this story again. And, scary. Well, I know people know how to navigate the internet. Nowadays, everybody just goes on Google. You can ask your phone, hey, look this story up. What? Give me news about the Loch Ness Monster or anything like that. Oop, there goes my phone. But during the live show, if you do tune into the live show, I do put links in the chat room. And sometimes it may not be links that are just the boring, mundane link to a particular story. Sometimes I find a link that's a little bit buried in the story. Or I also will share during the live show, I'll share photographs and other imagery that I put together to kind of give another dimension to these stories. I think that a live show nowadays, you have to have an extra dimension. Just to talk about a show is one thing. To have video of you standing there talking is another thing. But to actually bring photographs and examples outside of just your argument and your opinion, I think is very valuable for the listener. And it adds an extra dimension, especially with our technology nowadays, that if you're following along in a chat room, at least to get photographs and links to these stories. So that's what I provide to you every Tuesday night live in the chat room at the ParanormalKing.com, the Paranormal King Radio Network. And the show is, again, after it's live recorded, it's put out there as a podcast all over the place. And unfortunately, this week, we didn't get to do that. We had some technology issues. But this is that recording. And I'll begin... again, be live this Tuesday on February 26th. That's if I don't blow away. We have winds right now this afternoon gusting about 65 miles an hour outside. So I'm hoping not to lose any power. That's why I'm kind of shorting this episode up a little bit. Also to get this thing out before the weekend is out and over. Now we're going to move into UFO news. And some UFO videos, well, they're not meant to be taken seriously. Or at least that's the hope I have for this next story out of Australia. On February 17th, the Broome Police released a short video of a thunderstorm along with a caption, quote, after reviewing CCTV at Talon Beach of last night's storm, it appears we are not alone, unquote. And this was shared via social media, along with a telescope emoji and four UFOs with beams coming underneath them, emojis. Yeah, social media, gotta love it. The video starts with seeing a thunderstorm in the distance with heavy clouds. A couple of cars are parked in what seems to be, well, a park. Suddenly, as lightning flashes, a UFO quickly fades into the sight on the upper left side of the screen. Just kind of, it's really neat the way it just shows up when the lightning flashes. This UFO is just right there lit up. Then all of a sudden it starts to move and fades away. Now, one thing to note is that this video is being filmed with a phone off of the closed circuit television screen. So you can see a little bit of reflection, what appears to be an office. And as this UFO starts to move off the upper left-hand side, the phone kind of, I don't want to say it zooms in. I think the person just kind of moved in slightly. And I'm not sure, but I think this was done on purpose because it kind of covers up the solution to the story. And the story and video have both since gone viral. Many people believe this to be absolute proof of aliens and UFOs, while some others are, well, they're not quite convinced. The video is what people think it is. And it's pretty cool because I see Well, not quite 50-50. It's never quite that way. But I see a lot more skeptical people commenting on this video than not. Or I should say more than usual, anyway. One news outlet, News Hub, out of New Zealand, had the headline that police were baffled by the mysterious UFO. But I'm not sure that's the case. Baffled is, I don't know, it seems like that word is thrown around a lot. And that's just, when you can't hype a story up anymore, you just say, well, the people that are looking at this are baffled. They have no idea. It's a quick out with those types of stories. Now, the reality of the video is, well, it's nothing more than lens flare. I know that sounds like the 21st century swamp gas excuse or weather balloon excuse, but unfortunately, this is true in this case. When watching the video, you'll notice there is a white car backing up in the lower right corner. And this, again, is when the camera moves in, you kind of lose sight of that a little bit. But again, you're viewing this from a phone capturing this, not the actual closed-circuit camera. So if you can see the whole picture, you would see that this car backing up actually has an effect on the overall image. So the UFO appears when the lights come on that vehicle and it begins to back up. And the movement perfectly mimics the movement of this purported UFO. Well, that's the official explanation anyway, but many people still believe this is a genuine UFO, but I'm not sure why every UFO video has to be the proof that everybody thinks it is. This is, you know, you always see this, the headline of, this is genuine proof. This is beyond proof of UFOs. This provides proof. And then they find out it's a Goodyear blimp or it's lens flare, something like this. So I don't know why every single video has to be the big proof that everybody's been waiting for. Sometimes it's just lens flare. I don't know. Well, thanks to Scott Brando of UFO of Interest for getting this information out there to many news outlets so they can get the facts straight about this story. And he was very quick about it and very thorough, got this out to a lot of people, which is very beneficial because these stories are a focus for a very short period of time. People pay attention to it, and then it's, oh, what's that going on over there? And we all shift our attention. So the quicker you can get that information out there, the better, so people can get the truth behind these stories. So often these stories do have logical outcomes, but no one sees that part of the story. And again, it's nice that this explanation has been added to many of the stories being published about this purported UFO. So far, the video has been viewed, I think it's up to about 15,000 times at this point. So that's a lot of people seeing this. And again, how many people are not getting that lens flare explanation? Now we're going to move on to MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. We're going to talk about their sighting statistics for the month of January. They've been released, and it's a pretty good time, I think, to kind of stand back and look at this. Now, not often do these numbers really give us any kind of in-depth look at UFOs statistically. And it's just basic numbers to me, but I still cover them because it's the major UFO outlet in the world that that I can cover here in the United States and talk about UFO sightings. There's not a whole lot that we can correlate with these numbers and dig in and pull data from. But right now, in case you haven't heard, there's this TV show called Project Blue Book on the History Channel that's getting a lot of attention lately from a lot of people, just the general public especially. So now it's time to see if TV shows like this have any effect on UFO sightings. And looking back the last few Januaries, we saw 690 total sightings back in 2018, 580 in 2017, 687 in 2016, and a whopping 721 back in 2015. To be fair, if you add those all together and divide the total by four, so 4 years, we see an average of 669 sightings reported in January. So what do we have this year? Well, the total report for this January was 839 total worldwide reports. That's quite the increase. So maybe, just maybe, this TV show, Project Blue Book, which broke in January. Got a lot of press about it. A lot of people tuned in for the first few weeks at least. U.S. viewing seemingly is down over the first four or five episodes, but worldwide it's pretty consistent. So I think that the show is being watched by a lot of people, and maybe it's affecting people in different ways. Maybe it is making them want to report UFOs that they saw. And again, the reports for January, again, 839 for this year, is just a number of sightings reported for the month. It doesn't mean that it's that they actually happened in January. It's just that they were reported in January. So somebody saw this TV show and they were influenced to talk about a story they saw in 1978 or 1983, and they come out in January and they talk about it. Well, it's going to go under this listing for January. MUFON is, despite years of saying they're going to do so, have not yet updated their sightings reporting a hub there, so you're not really able to pull those things out yet at this point. So whether or not it does have an effect, I don't know. But again, if we go back years ago, there was a TV show called Hangar One that was essentially based on MUFON's sightings. During the time, the second year, the second season that the show was on, right before it was canceled, it was getting a lot of press. It was in the media a lot. It was announced that it was being canceled. People were upset about this. And some of their best shows were on that second season. And that second season had record numbers of reports for UFOs in the months prior to the show going off the air. So I would think that TV shows, popular culture, definitely has an influence on the number of reports that are brought in. And that, I don't want to say anything about that, but I think, you know, I'm not saying that MUFON doesn't really care about that, but you know, what's good for press and what's good for attention, it's good for the business. And unfortunately, MUFON is a business; it's money driven. So any attention is good attention. So they'll take it. And not to get too far down the political landslide here, but we'll get back to the numbers. So 839 sightings total. The United States obviously had the most, because this is, again, MUFON is a U.S.-based UFO research organization. So of course, even though they have feet on the ground in other countries, most of the feet are here in the U.S. So the United States had 624 of those 839 reports. January of 2018, kind of looking back for perspective's sake, yielded 495 U.S. reports. 2017 had 404. So again, that's quite a jump. It's been building up, and that's quite the leap. 624. So the United Kingdom was second with 62 reports. Canada was next with 40. Australia turned in 11. France had 8. Mexico, 7. Brazil, 6. Spain had 5. The Netherlands and Africa had 4. And there were 46 more countries of the total 55 that turned in reports, with 28 of which only turned in one report. Now, the 624 U.S. reports, California had the most with 77, which they should, because, again, if you've listened to the show in the past, you've heard me say it, I'll say it again, California is number one in state population. So, of course, they should have the most sightings. It just makes mathematical sense. Texas was second with 66, followed by Florida with 44. Pennsylvania had 26. Washington State had 23. Georgia, 21. New York, 20. Illinois and Indiana had 18 each. Arizona, Oregon, and Colorado all had 17 each. Ohio and Massachusetts had 16 each. Virginia and North Carolina had 15. Michigan turned in 14. Oklahoma and Tennessee both had 13 each. Kansas, well, they had 12. Minnesota and Kentucky had 11. And Nevada and Missouri had 10 each. There was another 26 states that turned in 9 or less reports, with just 2 reporting only one case. That's pretty good right there. One thing that I like to do on the show, not just throw out those numbers, but also talk about a little per capita information. And per capita, generally when you're talking statistical information, is based on per 100,000 people. And MUFON used to do this. They used to provide the per capita information, but for some reason they don't anymore. I think it's because it's in percentages, more or less. And just to kind of give you an example of this, so California, again, the number one state in population, also the number one state in reports this, well, not this month, but January, 77 reports. And if you do the math, you take the number of reports, you divide them by the population, which I can't remember off the top of my head. It's a lot of millions of peoples. And you multiply by 100,000, you would get this percentage, 0.195. 0.195. So it's, yeah, it's not very many. It's like an arm of one person per 100,000 people is what I always say. And so it's less than one person. It's less than a quarter of a person. So it's less than one out of every 400,000 people, basically, which is statistically not very good. Let's just put it that way. So 195 is kind of the baseline here. And I kind of look at that and look at some other states that maybe were a little higher. And we'll look at Massachusetts, who is 15th in state population. They only had 16 sightings, which is still pretty good. But consider, again, only 15th in population. So that translates to a 0.232 per capita. Alaska, the 48th state as far as population, they only had 2 sightings. But that translates to a 0.271. So again, you can't just look at numbers of sightings. You have to look at how many people live in that state as to how significant that is for those states. Washington State, 13th in state population, 23 sightings, which is pretty good for them, 0.305. Let me look at Nevada. They're 32nd in state population. They had 10 sightings, so that translates to a 0.33 per capita. Oklahoma, 28th in state population. They had even more sightings than Nevada. They had 13. They ended up with the exact same per capita, 0.33. That was a little higher when you draw out the numbers there. New Mexico, 36 in state population, 8 sightings, but they turned in a 0.382. Then we have Oregon, the state of Oregon, 27th in state population. They had 17 sightings. Their per capita was 0.406. Well, 406, I guess. Delaware, 45th in state population. They only had 5 sightings, but that translated to a 0.517. So pretty much half a person, or I guess you'd say one out of every 200,000 people. I guess that would make, yeah, I guess that would translate to that. Wyoming, dead last in state population. They only had 3 sightings, but it's still 0.519 in per capita. So one out of 200,000, well, a little less than 200,000 people reported a sighting. So much bigger than California, even with the 3 sightings. So again, state population has a little bit to do with it. And you wonder, you know, what these reports are. I am no longer a MUFON member for personal reasons. And so I don't really have access. Even then, some of the reports were, you'd really have to really spend a lot of time disseminating this stuff. So I used to spend a lot of time trying to dig into these things, but it was really, I mean, some of the stories, some of the people saw stuff, and it really was meaningless. And so it was really just kind of, you're chasing your tail with these sightings. But that's MUFON's job. That's what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be out there looking for things that are significant. They should be chasing down these numbers. They should be looking at this per capita information. They should be looking at the states that are a little higher than normal. And this month I would give the award to Oregon, who had a 0.406 per capita, but 17 sightings. It's pretty good for them. It's a high number of sightings. So what was going on there? What did they see? I would be digging in if I worked for MUFON in that area of the month, and just trying to see what's going on there. But again, they're the research and investigation outlet. I don't work for them, so I'm not telling them what to do. But if I was working for MUFON and I was the state director of Oregon, I would definitely be looking at January. What went on? What happened? And what can we draw from that? So anyway, that's your MUFON setting statistics for January. We're going to move to other news. And this story is near and dear to me because I have feet, I guess. And I've also been in this area a number of times in the last few years. Strange things are still afoot in the Salish Sea area of the Pacific Northwest. And yes, pun intended on that. Now, the Salish Sea, to kind of explain this, refers to the bodies of water surrounding Vancouver Island, which is huge up there in the Pacific Northwest. It belongs to Canada, as well as the Puget Sound and surrounding waters near Seattle and Tacoma, Washington, of the United States. It's a large expanse of area, and again, I've spent a lot of time there. Went on two cruises there in the last, 12 years. Vacation there a few times on the San Juan Islands. Beautiful area down there and off the coast of Washington. Beautiful area, but there's some strange things going on there. So in the first show of this year on January 8th, which is episode 381, if you're keeping track at home, I talked about what is officially known as the Salish Sea human foot discoveries. And since 2007, there's been 20 discoveries of shoes or boots with feet still in them discovered around the region. Many of these feet have been matched to people missing or have committed suicide, while others remain a mystery. A men's size 9.5 Nike Free running shoe, my gosh, that's my size, was discovered along the shore of a West Vancouver beach, and authorities are stumped as to whom the shoe and foot belonged to. Gosh, that was a bad pun. That was not intended, stumped. Baffled. Let me just say baffled. How's that? Sounds better. This is the 15th case of a foot and shoe washing ashore in British Columbia, and now the 21st overall in the region since 2007. 10 of the 15 cases have been solved. And if you were in the chat room last Tuesday, I did show a graphic, not graphic picture, but I show a picture of a, well, I guess it's a graphic, you know, a graphic showing where all these discoveries were in the British Columbia area. They kind of don't talk about the Seattle-Tacoma ones, but more focused on the Canadian ones, I suppose. So why is this story coming out now? This happened back in September when they found this shoe. Well, obviously they were doing their own research, trying to figure this out. And Andy Watson, a spokesperson for the coroner's office, stated, quote, typically our process would be that we would work with any of the available information that we'd find at the scene to help determine the identity. But in this case, we've exhausted these options. So now we're turning to the public in hopes that we can get some information to help create a match and determine the identification, unquote. All investigators have to go on at this point is that a left foot was found in a blue sock inside a light gray left shoe of a size 9.5 Nike free running shoe with a black swoosh logo. Yeah, that's it. Now, inside the shoe was also an ortholite insert, and they are now looking for anyone with any information on who the foot and shoe may have belonged to. And, yeah, that's a zany, crazy story right there that, again, I've been following that story for quite a long time. Probably not since it first started, but shortly thereafter, it's really got a lot of attention, and a lot of people were talking about this, and wondering, you know, is this something sinister? Is there some evil behind it? And no. It's really a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's currents and the way the ocean moves in. A foot is going to basically come off of a body. It's kind of one of your thinner points there. And the buoyancy of a shoe nowadays, especially, is going to keep that foot afloat. So where this shoe was found at this beach is really not an area where they think anything happened. It's just where this foot and shoe just happened to come ashore. So it's really It's really not so much a mystery as it used to be. They kind of figured it's just has a lot to do with currents. But where are all these bodies coming from? That's the scary thing to me. The one correlation is that a majority of these shoes so far have been running shoes. And as I've said, a lot of these have been solved. A lot of these were suicides. Some were accidents, boating accidents and different things. And they were able to use DNA to figure some of these out. Other ones, yeah, not so much. Like this latest one, they have no clue as to what happened. Wow. So we're going to go from the Pacific Northwest to pretty much outer space. I'll put it that way. We're going to talk about this particular story. A former Major League Baseball player, Jose Canseco, has made the paranormal news this week. Always the center of controversy, the 1986 Rookie of the Year, six-time All-Star, and two-time World Series winner, was at the center of the steroid controversy in baseball and made things worse, much worse, with a tell-all book that named many of his friends in this controversial steroids thing that occurred that kind of ripped baseball apart. He's since struggled with a steroid addiction himself that cost him a chance at playing baseball at various levels of competition since. Canseco also has a knack for the zany. Now, while playing for the Texas Rangers, back on May 26, 1993, he raced back for a ball at the warning track, hit by Cleveland Indians infielder Carlos Martinez. And as Canseco looked to find the outfield wall, trying to catch Carlos's hit ball at Cleveland Municipal Stadium, which was my home team or my home stadium there. I don't know where I was at that day. I don't think I was at the game. I do remember seeing this, though. Well, he took his eye off the ball, which promptly landed on top of his head. Not his eye, the ball landed on top of his head and it bounced over the wall for a home run. And maybe this is when things started to go downhill for Jose. I don't know. I think he was already, well, we'll leave that one alone. But I think maybe this affected him a little bit. Canseco has been known to say some pretty outlandish things on Twitter throughout the years as well. On April of 2012, his Twitter account was briefly deleted. And when it came back, he claimed, well, it was aliens that deleted it. He also claimed that he died one night and came back as a vampire. Well, I'm not sure that's how that works, but that spawned many other nonsensical ramblings. And Canseco admits some financial troubles following two divorces. That'll always do it for you. I'll tell you what, one would be bad enough, I would think. But two? Yikes. He offers his followers a chance to spend the day with him to do anything for $1,000. It's pretty desperate times right there. Fast forward to February 12th of this year, and a series of tweets has Canseco in the news again. This time he tweeted, quote, "Come spend the day with me and my alien buddies. I'll show you Bigfoot and a real alien," unquote, and told followers to call his management agency. He also told his followers, quote, "Come step into my world, the Twilight Zone, the world of pure imagination," unquote. Some news agencies feel he's trying to create a Bigfoot and UFO research agency. But I don't think so. I think this is just another money grab. I mean, if you go through his tweets, you see he's really desperate for money and his followers to send him money, give him money, come hang out with me for money kind of things. The same day as this tweet, he also asked his followers if anyone could help him put together a subscription-based internet show and said, if you're in Las Vegas, come play golf with him through contacting his management, which again, that pretty much means you're going to have to pay for it. Now, HuffPost called the phone number of his agency, and some reports had said that the message on that from his inbox, I guess, was full. HuffPost was able to leave their number and received the following text message, which said, quote, "Spend the weekend with Jose for $5,000 cash. Only five lucky individuals will get a golden ticket. Oompa Loompas ain't got nothing on Bigfoot. Travel in his custom RV to authentic alien sightings and proven Bigfoot habitats, camp out in the wild, tell stories, and maybe meet a real Bigfoot. You never know what's going to happen with Mr. Canseco. Food included, only serious inquiries only. I will help you book your flights to Vegas and set itineraries. Thank you, Morgan, unquote. So money grab. I mean, five people times $5,000, that's $25,000. Take out some expenses, that's still probably about $8,000 to $10,000 he's going to pocket from that. That's going to go to, one of his ex-wives? I'm not sure. But here are a few more gems from Jose Canseco. I mean, my gosh, you just go through his old tweets. It's entertainment. There should be like a there should be a Twitter account just devoted to old Canseco tweets. I think that would be very entertaining. February 3rd, he said, quote, "I just time traveled into the future. Rams win 27-20, unquote. That refers to the big game that happened that day. And if you remember, that didn't turn out that way. 13-3, Patriots won. Not the Rams 27-20. Now, January 30th, well, that was an odd day on Twitter for Jose as he first bragged about golf clubs. Then he said, quote, "We are in communication with aliens with a very flexible body composition called the A151 or AI51, unquote. Followed by, quote, "These aliens are going to teach us how to try and travel. The brain can physically travel without the body." That's a direct quote. Unquote there. And then, quote, "Aliens have been trying to teach us how to time travel, but first we have to change our body composition, which we are not willing to do. We have tried with animals and it failed," unquote. Ramble, ramble, ramble. Which led to these interesting factoids. Quote, and I quote, this is Canseco saying this, not me, "Time travel puts 42,651 pounds of pressure on human skeletal structure. Can you detach the brain from the body and equalize the pressure? It could be done," unquote. Whatever that means. And finally, quote, "Our science is totally irrelevant to aliens," unquote. That would look great on a t-shirt with Jose's website on the back, or his Twitter handle there would be great. We're just going to stop right there. He's out of his mind, pretty much. Hate to say it. Was a good baseball player, but I think steroids kind of got the best of him. And, financial issues will also do it to you. I did get to meet Jose. Well, I didn't meet him. I saw him at a club for gentlemen. That's all I'm going to say about that. Many, many years ago, a long time ago, back when he was with the Tampa Bay Rays. Well, they were the Tampa Bay Devil Rays at the time. They were in town. I saw him play a game. But then I saw him on a weekend evening. I think they were in town for the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I saw him maybe on a Friday or Saturday night. Don't remember. Long time ago. Anyway, that's your show this week. Zany, crazy things happening in the paranormal all over the place. And again, apologize for the technology issues, which does happen. That's the beauty of live radio. That happened back on Tuesday, February 19th. And we're going to be live again this Tuesday, February 26th. So tune in, and we'll see you then. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. Above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.